My guest on Simply Folk is Simply Folk personified. Tom Martin Erickson is one of the founders of the program, which started officially in 1979. He was also a longtime host and co-host of the program, and he spent a lot of time behind the scenes in venues all over the state and beyond, capturing music and storytelling and dance and conversation on tape to be shared on the air. Welcome, Tom.
Oh, thanks. It's a kind of a surprise to be here.
I'm so glad you came in. I wanted to sort of ask about the early genesis of Simply Folk and how you started, how you came to start recording things back in the 70s. And
I was assigned to assist somebody else in a recording. We recorded Jan Folkstad, Hans Bremy, and Mary Bartholomew in the Great Hall of the Memorial Union. I think that was like in the summer of 1976. And then Ronnie Hess, who worked here in the 70s and I believe in the early 80s, wanted to start a folk program. So she wanted a recording made of Michael Cooney and Rosalie Sorrells in the Great Hall. And I was assigned to do that. I did it on my own. I did another recording in January of 1977. It was Robbie Clement and Art Theme. And I was playing the recording, and somebody said, "I know that guy. That's Art Theme. He plays at this place over near Fort Atkinson like once a month." So I talked to Carol Cowan, who was the program director at the time, and asked her if I could make recordings at the Green Dragon Inn. And she said, well, what are we going to use them for? You know, it was a
valid question.
Yeah. And I said, well, Jim Fleming was doing a Sunday morning, I think it was a Sunday morning, I don't remember everything clearly, arts magazine program called Art and Soul, I think it was. And so I said, well, I'll make features. I'll interview the performer during the intermission, and I'll make features. And so that's what I did for about, 3 months or so. And then one day Carol came to me and she said, how would you like to produce a program? Well, this was a big surprise for me, but I jumped at the chance. And it was Sunday afternoon at 4:30 on WHA only. And we started in February. So the first month, the program was an hour because WHA still signed off at local sunset.
Oh,
then
AM still, yeah.
Yeah. And then the next month, it went to a half hour because since the sun went down now at 6 o'clock, now we could carry All Things Considered from 5 to 6. that program actually was called Simple Folk. And
Simple, S-I-M-P-L-E.
Right.
Okay.
And I took the title from that song in Camelot, What Do the Simple Folk Do? They dance, they whistle, they sing. So I continued with that for about 10 or 11 months. And then comes the advent of Wisconsin Public Radio as we know it. Up until then, it was WHA and the Wisconsin Educational Radio Network. So Becca Pulliam, she always gives me credit, and I always give her credit for the idea. We said, well, look, we're going to have two services, and we're going to have all kinds of new time that we can fill. So let's suggest a folk program. I'd been doing Simple Folk using live concert club recordings. She had been producing Women Made Music with Vicki Nunn. The two of them had done that program for a number of years. Five, six, 7 years, I think, probably. So Becca had the idea, I still give her credit, that we pool our resources. And so we wrote a proposal for a new program. And we wrote, with assistance, program descriptions for our own jobs, and then interviewed for the jobs that we had described. And and eventually were hired. So our first program aired Saturday night, the 6th of January, 1979. And it was a program that had to be recorded. We didn't have combo operation where we sat in the studio, did our own announcements and played the records or the tapes or whatever. So we had to record all of the programs that we did.
And you recorded it all into reel-to-reel.
Yep.
So you had the razor and the tape.
Yep. And for the first programs, because there wasn't an engineer assigned, she and I did it after hours. In the evening, taking turns, one of us would run into the studio and do the announcement, and the other one would start the tape, and then we'd come back. So there was a lot of editing at the beginning.
Did you have a kind of an overriding philosophy of what you wanted the show to be about?
If I had brought our proposal with me today, I could answer that. But we wanted to present a wide variety, and in our first program or our first weekend featured a concert recording of Gene Ritchie. It featured a conversation with a folklorist, Phil Martin, and we had done a few things like what each of us was bringing to the program. I shared some of my favorite concert recordings. Becca shared some of her favorite vinyl recordings. But we wanted to be serious about it. We wanted to acknowledge the what some people would call the European folklore. Polish polka music, the Dutchman sound over on the Mississippi River with the polkas and waltzes. We also had chances early on to catch a number of interesting ethnic festivals. There was a family band festival with an African dance troupe, a Latin American guitar trio, a Polish family band from Junction City, a Finnish family band from up on the Iron Range. So we wanted to do that. We also wanted to acknowledge the performers in our area who sang songs about our area. We felt everything to be imported from the East or the West Coast. And we had access through Joanne Joanne Moore at the Green Dragon Inn to a lot of the traditional singers and singer-songwriters from Chicago. So that was great. And when the Extemp was going, Great Guns Up in the Twin Cities, Madison and Milwaukee, maybe Wausau or La Crosse, were stopover points during the week. They would have, big-name performers would have gigs on the weekend in one of those places, and then they often played someplace in Wisconsin in the middle of the week. So we had a chance to get them. So I suppose we tried to be a lot of things to a lot of people.
Well, I think it worked. My goodness, I look back at some of the things that you've captured, especially on Reel to Reel, with everything from the biggest names and Pete Seeger and Stan Rogers and some very special recordings, and right down to our local singer-songwriters writing about the Wisconsin River and writing about the Kickapoo and, you know, life on the farm.
Yeah, we were really blessed to have that. But I think also that these Wisconsin performers, especially in the days before digital recording, when making an album was a big, big project. It took a huge investment of time and money. For them to be able to come in and maybe just do one or two songs in the studio, or if we got them doing three or four songs at a festival, that gave them a voice. And it also worked that way with our pledge drive rent parties, because people would come in and play three or four songs maybe and help us get support for the program and for Wisconsin
Public
yeah. Radio. So I think it would. I'd like to think that it was a symbiotic relationship, that we all helped each other, and we also wanted to identify and support the venues that were offering the music, the restaurants that would have somebody come in on Friday night. That was the whole thing, starting the calendar. And we did try to get to all of those places that were offering the music so that people could hear what it sounded like to be there. We really wanted to bring people together, I think. And somebody once said to me, made a very nice comment about what I was doing. I said, all I'm doing is introducing people to each other. I'm introducing you to this singer. If you like that singer, that's wonderful. But I don't really get any credit for that. If I weren't doing that, somebody else would. So.
Oh, and you've shared some wonderful music over the years. And you talked about sort of providing the sound or the soundscape of some of these venues. And there are occasions where you can hear the coffee machine going off, or you hear people talking, and you can just envision being in that place in your mind's eye, what sometimes gets called theater of the mind or concert of the mind. And it's really special.
I thought it was. And for that reason, I left some of those things in there. Well, we can be much more precise now with our digital editing. It was definitely more difficult with a grease pencil and a razor blade. But yeah, we wanted to make it the thing to do. We wanted you to go out. We wanted you to hear these people. And when you hear them, well, maybe you bought their records, or maybe you heard a name dropped from the stage. And I, at the beginning, I really did get a lot of names like that. People would say, did you like that song? You know, so there'd be a lot of applause, and somebody would say, did you like the song? Well, that was written by Don Lang in Iowa City. And I don't think we ever had Don Lang on the program. I think we tried to record him a couple times. One time during a tractor pull at a county fair, and that didn't work out. But people called or wrote in and requested Don Lang's songs because somebody else chose to sing them. So that was fun.
It is a sharing. And I think also you paid a lot of attention to the various immigrant groups in the state, too. So there was music from the Finns and the Swiss and what's the record label in Baraboo?
Kuka.
Yeah. They've done some really neat recordings, and I know some of those have been aired on Simply Folk over the years.
And even the newer groups, too. I remember going up to Wausau with Dusty Tomto once. I think it was called Sawdust City Days or something like that. And they had a tent where they had a lot of folk and traditional music, and they had a young woman, I think maybe 12 or 13 years old, a Hmong woman, and she sang this most haunting song about leaving her home. Mm. And there were probably, I don't know, 300 or 400 people in the tent, and you couldn't hear anything except this young woman singing. It was absolutely mesmerizing.
Wow.
That's one time. So it was interesting to encounter some of the newer people in Wisconsin too.
We talk about the Wisconsin idea here at WPR of sharing the resources of the university with the people of Wisconsin. And I think you and Becca and Judy started off doing that from the very early days.
That was definitely in our minds when we started. I mean, we wanted to, again, by way of talking about introductions, we wanted to introduce the people in Milwaukee to the people in Ashland.
Cool.
We wanted to introduce the people in La Crosse to the people in Green Bay. And after a few years, and we started seeing the people that we saw in Milwaukee, in La Crosse, at the festival there. So we don't claim any causality for that. But it was a very interesting and fun time to be working to meet friends and musicians in places where you didn't expect to see them.
And people still talk about the rent parties. They talk about specific concerts that they heard on Simply Folk. And even now, if we have somebody on to play live or pre-record, they are so grateful for the airtime that they get and for the response that they get, and they can sell CDs and they get more people coming to their shows. And I remember the very last show that you did, and Skip Jones came in, and mm-hmm. I met him for the first time, and he said Simply Folk is the glue that keeps the folk community in Wisconsin kind of together. And I, having now experienced it for a few years, I absolutely get that and believe that.
Well, we were a point of contact, I guess. We started before cell phones. we started before email, but people knew that Becca, Judy, or I was always in the office, and so we were sort of like information, please, not only for finding out about a song that they had heard, but it might be, You played something from this place called the Blue River Cafe. Now, where is that? Can you tell me about that? So we were able to do that kind of thing.
Did you recorded a concert calendar that people could call and get an automated recording, right?
Well, Judy did that.
Judy did that.
Yeah, during her tenure as the producer and the host, she did that, and I. It was a good thing if something didn't happen on Monday morning, a concert was canceled or something like that. It also gave her a little more time for music or another story or something like that. She and I had always read them, and whether it was suggested to her or whether it was her idea, but it happened while she was doing it on her own. So, pardon me. So that was an innovation that came about when I wasn't there. And now, as you know, we have an online calendar, which is really amazing.
It is.
But a fair amount of work, too, isn't it?
It sure is. It sure is. And there are so many events, which is really heartwarming because it means that the community is still thriving and still healthy. But yes, it is an awful lot.
And I think we have to thank the management of Wisconsin Public Radio. I don't know of any other program that has had the same time slot for 35 years.
Yeah.
And so people know where they can go for the music and the information. So
yeah,
that's something that when I think about it, I go, wow, that's really something.
It is that commitment to supporting folk music radio on Wisconsin Public Radio. And I now hear from a lot of children, next generation, and sometimes third generation, that grew up listening to Simply Folk on Sunday evenings. You know, I get notes from people that say, I can remember my mom making food for the week for lunches and things like that every Sunday evening listening to the show. And we would talk about the music. And now my children are listening and that kind of thing. And that's pretty special.
Judy can tell the story of a woman who gave birth during the program at home. So I think we've been a lot of places. I think, and one of my favorite things was when people would call, say, well, I go to visit my mother or my father every weekend, but I don't leave to go home until 5 o'clock, because regardless of where I can listen to the program all the way home. And that was an interesting thing for me to think about too, that you could drive across Wisconsin and continue to listen to the program. And I guess, but also thinking about the introduction, and sort of reusing the example that I had earlier, the people in Ashland could hear what was happening in Milwaukee. So the idea of the statewide coverage, the statewide network for the program, was a huge benefit for us, and I think maybe for the listeners too.
And it reflects also the sense of community that folk music engenders anyway, you know, of a sense of helping and camaraderie. And I see among the performers so much collaboration, and you never know who's going to be appearing with whom and who's doing who else's song. And they work together, sort of the rising tide lifts all boats kind of a feeling.
Yeah, it's a non-competitive
right.
Culture, which makes it fun, but it also made it so much easier for us to become part of it, because everybody was giving. Sometimes you got something back, but I think there was a great joy in giving and sharing. Well, it always has been for me. I've enjoyed that.
Yeah. Well, and you talked about going from place to place in Wisconsin. Now we're on 35 stations and repeaters across the state, and one in northern Illinois even, which is just tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a testament to Wisconsin Public Radio, and as we continue to shore up the service, expand the service, and bring more people into the fold.
Well, and you can have some music online now, too, which, well, obviously we weren't online, but even just a few years ago, we couldn't post that. So it's made it more available
That's right.
That way too.
That's right. We have to conform to certain regulations. So
oh,
we
yeah.
can only have it up there for 2 weeks, and you can't put the playlist next to the music for fear that somebody might want to steal what's coming. Or
yeah, they're
know.
Nicer to you than they were to me.
But at least we can provide that, and I think especially for Packer Sundays, I find that a lot of people will then listen on Monday instead, so that's been kind of nice.
And that reminds me, I think it was in 1982 or 1983, we had a pledge drive in Sunday afternoon, and it was a playoff game between the Brewers and the California Angels. And so we were in here, and we had music, but the phones were not ringing. I can tell you the phones were not ringing. And then for a long time, when 60 Minutes was the most popular program on television, things were pretty quiet for that first hour on Sunday night, too.
I bet they were. I wanted to talk a little bit about the chronology of things. So you and Becca got it started, and you were co-hosts. And then Becca left for the East Coast, and did you do everything by yourself then for a while?
We had just barely started when Becca was given the opportunity to do a 3-month internship at NPR.
Wow.
And so I worked on my own there for a while, and but at some point in there, and I don't remember exactly, we asked Judy to come in and help out. And then when Becca came back, Judy, really on her own initiative, came up with the idea for the Wisconsin Patchwork Program, using the recordings that Helene Stratman Thomas had made in the 1940s. And she made 13 programs from that, which we aired at, I think it's the last half hour of Simply Folk for 3 months. But then it really was pretty much time. Becca was offered a nice position on the East Coast. So Judy became more permanent. But just like all of us, it was a couple of years before it was official. I mean, she was here, she was being paid, but she didn't have a full-time position. And so Judy and I worked together really happily for, I'd say, about 8 years or something like that. And then I was asked to take the position of operations manager. And I really thought, and this is true, I said, I should let somebody else do this. Not because I wanted to give up the fun, but we all bring our own perspective to it. There are performers or songs that always immediately come to mind, and I thought they should have something else. So I did that. So Judy then did it for like 15 years on her own from 1991 to 2005. And then when she retired, they asked me if I'd like to come back and do it. And I said no, because I didn't think you could go home again. but then I thought, oh, wait a second. I've got a few more years left, and I think I owe it to myself to try this. And it was a great time. I had a great time. I had a lot of catching up to do, especially on the technical
side. Oh, I suppose everything was digital by then, wasn't it?
Yep. And as the operations manager, I'd seen us go through a couple of different technologies. Anybody yeah. who wants to remember those little DAT tapes.
Oh, the DAT discs.
Yeah.
Oh, DAT tapes,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, those.
They don't hold up so well, we've come
no,
to find out.
No, no, they didn't. It was a nice idea in terms of size, but just a myriad of problems with them. And now things seem to settle down again a little bit, so that's nice. And it was a great time. I really enjoyed that 5 years, but then it was time to go. So.
Well, you got a lot of wonderful recordings that last 5 years. But I know you and Judy also did some recordings, and one of the CDs that I enjoy is the 10th Anniversary Tour, and that was done, looks like, in the dead of winter in January of 1989. My
yep,
goodness.
Yep, we did. And it was a challenge because the first three nights were a Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, and they were in Milwaukee, Marshfield, and Oshkosh. And the Saturday and Sunday night shows were live. We had a portable satellite uplink.
Oh, you were broadcasting live?
Mm-hmm.
Ah.
Yep. And then the three following programs came about a month later, and they were during the week, and they were La Crosse, Menominee, and Ashland.
Wow.
But we wanted to go back to the places that had been kind and supportive of what we were doing, and wanted to hold these places, lift these places up again. And it was really fun. It was really fun. It was a lot of work because I think we had about a 6-person crew, and I mean, we took all of our own gear, so we were packing up the speakers and the monitors and the mixers and things like that. But it was a great team effort, and we had a lot of fun doing that. And as you say, I think there was a lot of really good music that came out of that.
Mm-hmm.
The audiences were wonderful, and that inspired the performers and even us, because we just pay more attention and we're catching more nuances of the performance when the audience is on and the performers are on. Then we get caught up in the excitement too.
Oh, you can hear it on the recordings. There's such enthusiasm and such a wonderful feeling between the stage and the audience.
Mm.
Yeah.
We always tried for that. There were a few recordings, sadly, that were poorly attended. And so we never played those. It's a chance that you take. You don't know what else is going on. I remember going a coffee house gig in Stevens Point, and it would have been well attended, but I believe it was also the night of the Take Back the Night March. So a lot of students were participating in that. And those things you don't know.
Yeah, no, you don't know what you're going to get. That's right. But it makes up for it with the ones that are just amazing. And I wonder if you, as you think back to some of the places you went and some of the concerts you recorded, what some of the highlights might be for you.
Well, that's easy and it's hard. Our own most successful effort had to be the Rogers family reunion. People drove from Washburn for that concert.
Wow.
Stan Rogers was certainly the, I think, was the draw for a lot of people. But Gamble Rogers was always an exceptional and very different kind of musician and entertainer. And Sally Rogers, too. So we were very pleased with that. We were very happy. And this was another thing, too, that really made me happy. When we were able to work with the Wild Hog in the Woods Coffee House, the Madison Folk Music Society, the Southern Wisconsin Bluegrass Music Association, we co-sponsored a number of concerts in the 1980s. So each group just put in a little bit toward the guarantee, and we were able to bring some great folks. One of the concerts that I remember was the five Swedish fiddlers, Jeppe Nyström's. They came the summer after Stan Rogers' death, and that was a balm, I think, for us who were still reeling from the shock of Stan's death. That was a great concert. I will always remember, and I think for the most exciting one for me was a concert over at Old Music Hall. It was Altan.
Oh.
And this was before Frankie Kennedy's death. But they were playing absolutely marvelously. Oh, they were really on, and the audience was on. And Dusty and I were sitting up in the balcony with our headphones on, and I tapped him on the shoulder. He took his headphones off, and I said, "This is why we do this." To be there at moments like this, it was utterly fantastic.
Yeah.
The Frankie Kennedy was telling stories, and the four of them were just playing so wonderfully.
Yeah.
It's I can't say too much more than that, but I would also have to say that sort of personally, my mentor, my inspiration was Art Thieme, whom I recorded very early on, even before there was a Simple Folk, and he actually was we played his concert on the first Simple Folk program in 1978. So I'm sure that I'm forgetting somebody. I'm sure that I'm leaving somebody out. Mm-hmm. But those four performances really stick in my mind.
Right, right. Well, and that folk music in general, whether it's in a coffee house or even a place like Music Hall, is still so intimate. You're still so close to everything in you. There's a rapport with the audience and so much storytelling that goes on. And I think it makes it a little more special, and you feel it lifts you up, for me anyway, more than many other genres of music.
I think so. And one of the reasons that I wanted to do music in performance was that intimacy. I mean, it certainly wasn't the oral tradition where you learned the song from somebody else. But if you were driving in your car, it was just you and that performer. There was nobody else around. It's just the two of you in the picture. That person's singing, you're listening. And that's what radio accomplishes. like nobody, nothing else.
It is. It's a very intimate kind of a one-on-one medium still.
Yeah, it's very personal.
Yeah, yeah. And you mentioned our theme, and I'm so happy that we still replay him. I just had an LP last 2 weeks ago Sunday, and people still want to hear his music, and it's a very special slice of our upper Midwestern life that he has written about.
Yeah, he cared very much about that, and I remember in one of the first performances that I recorded of his, he said, you don't have to be cowboys. You don't have to be East Coast whalermen. We have music right here. We have music from the, especially from the lumbering days that are significant songs. And as another performer said, they're like snapshots. They are pictures. They tell us what life was like then. And that's also an aspect that always fascinated me, the sort of historical or cultural aspect. Where we came from, how we got to be where we are today. Some of those songs tell us about that.
They do, and so many of them come out of the tradition that started in the UK and then traveled across the Atlantic and then sort of came across the prairies. And, you know, you can hear the evolution of the music. Yep.
Yeah, you hear that song and say, well, that's a great tune and that's a great story, but, well, it doesn't really work here. So I'll make it work for here. And I think a good example of that is the Pinery Boy, which I think originally was the Sailor Boy. So there you've got it. And but it tells a story here.
Yeah, about our lives here.
Yeah, about our grandparents or great-grandparents. Yeah.
Right. So what are you doing in your retirement, Tom?
Housework. No, I rather like that. I have my wife and I travel to Germany almost once a year. We have very good friends there. We have friends who live in Leipzig, and then we have friends who live near Mainz and Wiesbaden, and they treat us like their cousins. We go and stay with them. We take side trips, and we find too as we become a little more mature that we, now that we can do some other kinds of traveling, we have a chance to visit our siblings. And my family is fairly far flung. Mm. So being able to visit them, see them more often. And I've done a couple of programs on Norwegian emigration songs.
Oh.
So I'm plenty busy enough.
Now, I know you used to do some singing, choir singing. Do you still do
I sing in a Norwegian men's chorus. Yeah, that's a lot of fun. And I could put it in a plug. We're not bad.
I think I've heard your chorus. It is pretty good. Yeah.
So I'm plenty busy. They say that when you retire, that you're busier than you were before, and in many ways you are, and I think it's because you can do more. Your day is not circumscribed by your work, by your job. So you can do other things.
Right. Well, I want to thank you for the legacy that you have left. We have over 1,000 concert recordings in the archive. And we were lucky to have an archivist for a short time. And everything we have is organized now into a database. We know when it was recorded, we know who it was, and we know which ones have been converted to digital. And we look at this enormous body of work, and it is mind-blowing. It must be one of the most important collections of its type in the country. So the legacy that you and Judy and Becca have left is phenomenal and quite a resource for us here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, we didn't think about it when we were doing it, really. But I've had a chance to talk to a few other people, and there are a lot of people who feel that it's one of the four or five most significant collections in the United States. Largely because of the longevity of the we have people at the beginning of their careers. We have them, you know, just before they retire,
right?
Maybe so. That's a lot of fun, and we have people who might not otherwise have been heard, too. So, yeah, we take a lot of satisfaction, I think, from that.
Just to be able to go when Pete Seeger passed away and to have the choice of programs and to hear him in Wisconsin for a Wisconsin event, it made it so personal and so special. And Doc Watson and, mm-hmm. you know, so many others that as we're losing some of our real luminaries of folk, you have left us with a body of work for them, which is pretty special.
Well, we didn't know what we were doing, maybe, but it is nice to think that what we worked at has been seen to have some value and to have it archived and to have it preserved so that other people can use it, other people can listen to it. It is great satisfaction.
Now we just have to keep baking all those reel-to-reels.
Yep.
And get them transferred. There are still quite a few only on reel-to-reels.
Oh, I know. I know. We had to clean out the office. I don't know how many times when we just got so many. And Judy and I had a big office, too. We had a lot of room, but it doesn't take long for it to fill up. It really doesn't.
Right. Well, now we're getting them on hard drives, so.
That's fun.
Yeah. Well, Tom, thank you very much for coming in to talk about Simply Folk.
Well, you're welcome, and it's certainly nice to be able to talk to the people who have really made Simply Folk what it is, the listeners. So that's great. Yep. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah, they are the best. Thanks, Tom.